This is an interview with Evan Williams, also known as Snow Williams, on Saturday, 11th of October 2014. The interview is for the Canterbury History Foundation, funded by the 2014 Canterbury Community History Award. The interviewer is Kim Newth. The interview is being recorded at 5 Corbett Crescent at the Anthony Wilding Retirement Village in Christchurch. The interviewer will also be taking shorthand notes during this interview. This is file number F005. Okay, just to jump back a little bit, so your nickname Snow came from those girls originally?
No, my nickname came from Home Guard.
Oh, that's right.
I'd always been called Snow.
Right, okay. But do they pick up on that?
Yeah.
Oh, I see what you mean. They just translated it into Japanese.
Yeah, just so that they could talk about something that they knew without using their name.
Their actual name. Okay, yeah. So, and did you get that name originally? Why? Just
fair hair.
Yeah, so it wasn't for anything else. Yeah, I thought. Yeah. So we were talking just a moment ago about the Guard Battalion in Tokyo.
Yeah.
So that was something that you just every so often you were required to.
I only did one tour to Tokyo on a guard duty, and it was brilliant. I've been back since, but not quite the same without your army mates.
And that was a month at a time, like it was for a month.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you talked about, it was guard duties at the
Imperial Palace.
Imperial Palace, which covered a big area.
Yeah.
Ebisu.
And also on the same duties as us would be American troops. They were quite different in their approach, and they were quite happy to shoot people who inadvertently walked across their bit of territory. So that was exciting.
So that would have been horrifying, really, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
To see people just shot down or...
Well, I didn't see it, but
no.
it happened.
Mm.
Very trigger happy.
Yeah, and the you were saying the drills there were very smart.
Oh yeah, excellent.
And so Tokyo at that time, what were your? I mean, obviously that would have been very different compared to where you'd been.
Well, it was sort of shades of Hiroshima because it had been bombed flat. An awful mess in parts. Certainly worse than Christchurch.
Yeah. And the people, there were a lot of hardship. I mean, you must have seen some sad sights, I imagine, with the people.
Again, it's relative to the way they were anyway. Very hard to tell whether they were poor as a result of being bombed, or whether they were poor.
To start with, yeah. And the
they were lovely people, really, you know. They had an awful lot to put up with them. Being at the centre of power in Tokyo meant that they were even more oppressed by their masters than the Japanese in the country districts like Yamaguchi.
And the basic services like roads and infrastructure, you know.
It was there, and even their railways were there. But I think the Yanks did some pretty strategic bombing when they did it.
They
managed to select places.
So ports and things like that, or important buildings. But, it must have been a very strange city to be in. Did it feel like at night? Were you able to get around much? We pretty much stay close.
I'm pleased you asked that. At night time, when we went down the street, we were safer than we would be in Christchurch at the same time. And when I went back on a visit after the games in Edinburgh, I was able to revisit that same experience where nobody was going to assault me or touch me.
So I was going to say, you know, in terms of how New Zealanders over there, you know, unwound, I suppose. The army, I understand, they supplied a fair amount of alcohol at times.
They had rest camps too.
Mm.
I never got to any of that.
Mm.
I didn't have a holiday.
I was going to ask you if you got to the hot pools at Beppu, but
No.
And where did you go to drink? Was it sort of, did you pretty much stay on the camp or in the mess or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
We like to go to, oh Lord, now I've forgotten the name of it.
I know there was a bamboo club mentioned in Yamaguchi, but I don't know whether that rings a bell. No.
Oh, I might have to come back to that one. A famous area in Tokyo where all the little sushi cafes and fried joints.
So you had some time there.
Yeah. But that was really interesting. Wander along there and see Japanese enjoying themselves.
Mm. And were there much you know, sports between the different
a battalion rugby team, and George Morrow, my mate around here in the village, was in charge of the sports teams at one stage. We won the Freiburg Shield.
That was a 27 battalion.
Yeah.
All right. And that was for rugby.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you played as well?
No, I wasn't in the team.
No, but that's quite an honour though. The Freiburg Shield.
Yeah.
So what was the Freiburg Shield? Had somebody literally made a shield or?
Oh yes. Yeah.
Oh okay.
I don't know where it is now.
Yeah. Now you also talked about you know, the other day that you're all pretty innocent back then, and I mean there was obviously a lot of prostitution going on in Japan though at the time, and I guess one of your jobs to try and keep the men away from those. Brothels and things. Yeah.
Occasionally I'd strike a duty where I'd have to go around and visit the places in the no-go areas and chase guys out. It was the least pleasant of my duties because people were being denigrated. You know, people were not being well treated. I'm thinking of the females. And the thought that our guys were into that annoyed me, made me angry. And there was a high degree of STDs in 2NZF or BCOF.
And there was a lot of education about that, though, wasn't there? Posters everywhere and stuff, but it didn't necessarily seem to...
Didn't mean a thing.
No.
And I think a lot of guys would be sorry that they ever got into that and took those risks. For 5 minutes, please,
yeah. Yeah, that's right. Which is
a bit ridiculous.
Yeah, because obviously he had some pretty horrific health impacts, that disease as well.
Yeah. And we don't have to go.
No.
It seems to be something that the army is known for, but I certainly didn't want to be a part of that.
Mm, mm. And yet the New Zealanders generally, you know, the contribution overall seems to have been, a positive one and.
Well, I know in our battalion it was definitely a positive. And if you see this photographic history, you might just get a glimpse of how we got on with the Japanese.
Yeah. And I guess everyone's attitudes towards the Japanese would have changed somewhat as a result of that service in Japan, because before you went, you had no idea really what to expect, did you? And probably a bit fearful. And
It depends on the person.
Yeah.
Some of them may have gone there and changed their thinking, but there would have been a few idiots who went and still want to denigrate the Japanese.
Mm. I mean, what were your overall impressions yourself of the Japanese?
I thought they were a great nation.
Mm.
I didn't like what they'd done, but then I've understood since the Second World War that the New Zealand troops weren't without fault when it comes to what had been done.
Yes.
Not without fault.
Yes, yeah. So you have to...
So the reality is...
People are
nobody's,
people.
Nobody's above blame.
Yeah. So you would have been there for a year, was it? A year? Yeah. And so mid-1947 you would have been just about coming home again?
Yeah.
And... Were you sad to be leaving in the end, or?
This is like now I'm being a 2014 guy. when you go overseas and you've had a lovely holiday in Queensland and you've been away for a week or 10 days and you fly back and you see New Zealand on the horizon, I get quite emotional. To be going home. In 1948, for an apparent, and I'm using my fingers, inverted commas, tough guy, to be coming home and feeling emotional about it, really wasn't thought of. But the fact was, I was emotional about getting back to New Zealand.
Huge relief, I guess, as well. You know, not to have had anything happen, you know. Yeah.
It would have been something that I'd never ever dreamed of. I've been trained to kill. I hadn't fired a rifle in anger. I hadn't had to kill anyone. I'd done a duty for the army. And I was reasonably proud of the way I'd carried out my instructions.
Yes, that's right. You couldn't ask for more, really, could you? Yeah. And so how did you get home again? Was it the same?
No, we went on the Dunera and came back on the Chitral.
Chitral,
C-H-I-T-R-O-L.
Oh, yes. And was that any better than the trip out?
Yeah,
not quite so crowded.
I think I'd probably toughen up a bit.
So when you got back, was it straight? Was it back to Burnham again, or
marched out.
Marched out. So that was it.
That was a gone Burnham.
Okay.
Never to be seen again.
I thought.
And
by this time, so you would have been just about married, wouldn't you? Or had you married? Did you marry after you got back, or right? Okay, so that was 1948, wasn't it? So, what was your first wife's name, if I can?
My first wife was Helen Knox, K-N-O-X, De Castro, small d, C-A-S-T-R-O.
C-A-S-T-R-O. Okay, yeah. And she was. So you met her earlier.
She'd been an ex, WAC, W-A-A-C, sergeant.
Right. Okay. And so you met her in Christchurch originally, had you?
Trentham.
Oh, right, yeah. So that was after the war, or yeah.
Yeah, just straight after the war.
Yeah, yeah.
That was 1948. I married my first wife in 1948.
Right. Okay. And so really it was kind of straight back into sort of civilian life then in many ways, wasn't it? Because you mentioned about the...
Well,
was it the council work again? Yeah.
Yeah, local body.
Yeah, local body work. Yeah, yeah. And you did have three children together, didn't you, I think? Yeah.
Yes.
So what years were they born? Or do you want to talk about their names or anything, or just touch on that?
My oldest child is... Margot, M-A-R-G-O,
mm-hmm.
Christine,
mm-hmm.
I call her Williams.
Mm-hmm.
My second child is Morgan Evan Williams.
Mm-hmm.
My third one is Owen Lloyd Williams.
Right, and so they, what ages are they now then, or what were their dates of birth, I suppose, or what years were they born?
The oldest are 63.
Crazy, isn't it? Child is 63.
Yeah.
And so, that yeah, and the others would be, what, like, yeah. So Owen would be, what, how?
54.
And Morgan would be somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
So he's, yeah. And so in 1951, you joined the Territorials, didn't you? So that was the 1st Battalion
Canterbury.
So what led you back to wanting to, you know, sucker for punishment or...
I was still army-minded.
Mm. And was that...
Really, that was my home.
Mm. Was it?
Nutty. All ex-soldiers have got a great feeling for each other.
And was that would have been more of a part-time, you know, again, back to weekends.
Right.
And you would have been training.
We were training CMT. Compulsory military training.
Right, yeah.
CMT guys.
Yes.
Who are now, the oldest are now 80.
Mm. Crazy, isn't it? And you carried on doing that.
I was only 10 years older than those guys.
Yeah. Yes, you've picked up a lot of command experience at a young age, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. And you stayed on in that role through to 1962. So they were happy years, I imagine.
Oh, brilliant, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But in 62, the younger officers were coming along and they were due to take responsibility for the battalion. And we were only filling posts that... should be theirs.
Mm,
so it was time to go.
Right. And there were, so that was still based out at, was that Burnham? Where was that? Still, it's Burnham again. Yeah. And what would you say were some of the key, you know, achievements of that time, really? Just, I guess you...
Passing
the baton, really, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Holding the baton and passing it on. Mm. Yeah, yeah. Gosh, you would have trained a lot of men in that time when you think about it.
Yeah.
An awful lot, yeah. And you worked as a professional secretary for the Canterbury Hotel Association. So when, what years was that happening?
I'd always done secretarial work. And when I came to Christchurch in 52 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind. Something about then.
Yeah.
I was working in the gas company to start with, but eventually I saw this guy in the Prince of Wales Hotel, the one that I'd chucked out of bed in Burnham, and he told me that they were looking for an executive officer. And would I apply? And I got the job. That meant learning a new lot of law, liquor licensing, and I did it well. I also had to defend a lot of hoteliers who were
exceeding their conditions or something.
Yeah, that's right. But I enjoyed it, again, because I was in the company of my mate, the Major, Arthur McGregor, and...
the one you chucked out of bed.
Yeah. and got to know these guys.
Mm-hmm. And so, and I think you talked about as well that the experience you'd had in the army, again, this intelligent anticipation, I mean, that sort of useful skill to have in that
Not everybody on your committee is going to like you or agree with you. And anticipating what these people are going to do and how they're going to undermine your efforts. Was a great help.
So that was like a full-time role you were doing. And so that went on for a number of years, did it?
But while I was still at the Hotel Association, I was also Secretary of New Zealand Amateur Swimming Association, and went to a meeting to talk about Commonwealth Games, and that first night I became the secretary for Commonwealth Games promotion. So I literally had a new career, which was supported by the Hotel Association. It was in their interests.
So just to go back a step, secretary of the New Zealand Amateur Swimming Association, so how come you had that role? Oh, why swimming?
Just because I was a secretary.
Right, okay.
Canterbury Football Association.
Right, okay.
Never played soccer.
but you had the skills to do it, so And yeah, so with the Commonwealth Games, so that was from quite early on, wasn't it? 1958.
It was. And it took 10 years, for 12 years actually, before we got the Games. That was a long, hard battle. And it was quite different to anything else I'd ever done.
So who was working with you on that bid?
Sir Ron Scott.
So it was council people mostly, was it? So it was Christchurch specifically bidding, as it were.
Yeah, but we had, first of all, to fight all the other people who wanted to run the game. Specifically Auckland. And it wasn't until we got the approval of the New Zealand Commonwealth Games Association that we could actually make our application for the games.
Yep.
I've still got some stuff there.
So your role was really just a part of that whole advocacy process, really, wasn't it?
I didn't like the word just.
No.
I don't mean
it belittles
to be
it a bit, doesn't it? But
I don't mean to be big headed, but I had a lot to contribute.
And once again, I guess that military command aspect again.
Leadership.
Yes, leadership. You must have provided a lot of leadership.
It was interesting.
Yeah, and
so we got the games finally.
Yes, and you attended these other games leading up to it. Yeah,
Jamaica in 1966,
and then Edinburgh
in 1970.
So what were you doing at those games? Like at the time, was it a question of schmoozing around the, you know, the Commonwealth Games executive people, I guess?
Wish you didn't ask questions like that.
Sorry.
Well, now that I was in the booze industry, a liquor industry, I was fairly adept at parties and functions and... inverted commas, getting to know people. I might add charm.
Yes. Yes. Do you exert charm along with the leadership?
Oh, well, I mean, anything that worked.
Yeah.
So we had a fantastic party in Jamaica, even by my standards. I had an introduction to the company made Jamaican rum. So it was a party.
Night to remember.
Well, we every opportunity we
had
drinkies. And,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Also, the Jamaican Hotel Association were quite supportive.
Right, yeah.
A lot of fun.
And Edinburgh would have been the same thing again, I guess.
Well, I mean, we moved around. I met Johnny Weismiller, also known as Tarzan. You heard of him?
Yes, yeah.
Met Jesse Owens.
The
1936 world half mile. I've forgotten. Great.
Sprinter, wasn't he?
Yeah. Made all sorts of people.
And then finally we got the games. That must have been such a thrilling moment, I imagine.
That was different. I'd had an introduction to the makers of McCullum's whiskey, and we got a lot of alcohol from them for our party. We had the New Zealand Army Band, the National Band, play for us. We had a party that was a party. And
this is to celebrate.
No, their application.
Right.
This is the big one to impress.
Right, yeah.
And it went down like a charm here. Brilliant, fantastic.
Mm. So that was 1970 when you finally... Yeah. So that was a whole lot of people who came here, did they, too?
To the games. That was in Edinburgh.
Oh, you're talking about the Edinburgh. Yeah, right, okay. Edinburgh. Yeah. And so you found out that we had the games, it was in 1970 that they made that decision, at Edinburgh.
Yeah.
Right.
And after it was all over... I came home through Tokyo, and
that must have been fascinating. Actually, like how so the changes there must have been huge changes compared to when you were,
And I felt very much at home.
Yeah.
Did you home and my hotel association people said, "Right, oh well, we've done our dash with Commonwealth Games. You've got the games, and we really need you to work for us wholly and solely. We want you to resign from Commonwealth Games."
Mm.
Well, that's all right. I'd had a fair trot. Been paid all the time by the Hotel Association. Been working for them as well.
Right. Do you want me to close that door again? And so you're with the Hotel Association pretty much.
The shortly after that, I left the Hotel Association and became executive director of Christchurch Road Transport Association.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Had to learn a lot of new rules.
Yes, I'll say, yeah. So that must have been, 70 sometime anyway?
Yeah.
Yeah. And did you... you stayed with that pretty much all the way through after that?
Or? Yeah, I finished work then.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Again, intelligent anticipation.
Mm.
Part of my job there was to learn transport licensing law.
Right,
and
yeah.
A job I had right from the very beginning while I was there was for 1 week every month I had to go to transport licensing sittings and have an overview from the point of view of the trucking industry on new applicants for licences. Now, I'd already had legal type training, so appearing in front of a tribunal with no great difficulty. And I had a fair amount of success arguing with solicitors appearing for the applicant who were qualified, the solicitors, and I was just a... yeah.
Experienced.
I end up with a letter behind the name for that, MCIT, Member of the Chartered Institute of Transport.
Oh, very good. And so, I was going to say too, you became Secretary of the 27 Machine Gun Battalion Association.
Yeah,
that was 1958. And so I think, yeah, probably need to talk about your, you know, that you've had this ongoing role with the association and national, was it five national reunions? Yeah. Did you organise, you would have organised those, wouldn't you? Yeah, yeah. And you're still involved.
I am, yeah.
Yeah. And I think you mentioned that in a way you've seen yourself as a facilitator. And
I mean, being secretary is one thing. Being president's another thing. I don't think that exactly says what I did and do. I'm a facilitator. I managed to make things happen.
Right, yeah. And it was really, when you say make things happen, so it's anything to do with the sort of...
organisation.
Organisation, welfare, crosses lots of things. Yeah. And the, I mean, one of the interesting things has been this alliance that's come about with the 2nd First Battalion.
Yeah.
And that happened 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah, so tell me a bit about that and why it was felt to be necessary and...
Well, I'd had a call from Colonel McGaslin, 2nd First Battalion, saying he'd like to have a chat about 27 Battalion and 2nd First getting together, and it was nothing much more than that. So we had a committee meeting and invited Colonel Hugh and his RSM, Dave Mills, to it, and he put it to us that 2nd First Battalion had a machine gun platoon. And they reckoned that they were pretty good and that they would like to adopt our traditions, our embellishments, and our ethics. So we were, you know, he was talking to guys who were then in their 80s. And we said, we've been anxious about what happens to 27 Battalion when we shut up shop. And it would suit us if 2nd First Battalion to took over the care of our embellishments, our traditions. And he said a bloody good idea. So we worked at it, and I think I showed you the charter document I wrote there.
That's right, and there was a special ceremony to...
Oh, we had a parade at Burnham with the whole of the battalion, and as many of our 27 guys as we could get together, I think there were 60 or so, and their partners.
It was a very long serving battalion that during the Second World War, wasn't it?
We, 27 and Div Cav, the two longest serving battalions in 2NZEF.
So they would have seen it right the way from, you know,
Greece.
Those African campaigns in Greece and through Europe and, And so the records are now for 27 battalion now out of Burnham, aren't they?
Well, yes. We don't have much in the way of records as such, but we've got our traditions. We've got our badge, our unit flash, which is a diamond with a triangle set inside it. The second first guys who qualify with their machine gun drills are allowed to wear our unit flash on their uniforms.
Right, okay.
And they really treasure them. They're a bit nutty about it. They think it's they're almost the ultimate.
Right, okay. And I guess that's nice for people like yourself to see that, you know, it's continuity, isn't it?
Well, it's almost like having everlasting life. we will be carried on in the minds of some people for a long time.
And there was...
So and we get on well with the guys.
Yeah. And there's still joint get-togethers as well, aren't there? Like luncheons and things. Yeah.
Every 3 months.
Yeah. But fewer of you going, I suppose, now. Yeah.
We're down to about a dozen. But Burnham always turn up with 10 or so from the machine gun unit and the CO. RSM.
And so they would be, you know...
Colonel Pete Hall.
Yeah.
And RSM Jason.
These are the guys from 27. Yeah. No, from...
Second
First, right. Yeah. And they'll be younger guys, I guess, wouldn't they?
Probably.
Yeah.
40 years younger.
Yeah. But the tradition means a lot to them, doesn't it?
It does.
And the coin, so this coin, how did, was that
That's
a joint thing between...
No, the Burnham, they've set that up.
Oh, right, So I was going to say, I should also mention that you had remarried, and so what was your second wife's name?
Ismay Doreen.
Ismay Doreen.
Smith.
Right, okay.
And her nickname was Smithy.
Smithy.
because nurses were known by their surname.
Right, okay.
And her number one nursing mate died just recently, and I'd give a eulogy for that.
Right. Because your first wife was a nurse as well. Yeah.
No, she was Army.
Oh, Army. Yeah. Right, yeah. That's right, you told me that, yeah. And you had two children by Ismay.
Yeah.
So what, I should probably ask you their names too, yeah.
Hugh Trezise.
Trezise.
T-R-E-Z-I-S-E. Williams. And Rosemary Ann.
With no E?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Charles.
Right, and so how old are they, those two children now?
Oh, God. 50-ish, 50 plus.
Right, yeah. And Esme's still alive, but as you mentioned, yeah, she's not too well now, but yeah. So that was a happy marriage, though, I think, wasn't it, from what you're saying?
Yeah.
So the, I mean, just to wrap things up a bit, because we've been going for ages, haven't we? But in, I noticed in your room, you know, it's, I think it's interesting in a, at a retirement village like this, you've been here for a couple of years, like trying to decide what you'd take into that little room must have been, that must have been quite hard, you know, but it strikes me that it's, that it is, you know, those, that military experience that's really stood out for you, you know, in your one way or another, or the people you met as a
part of my life.
Yes, yeah.
And it's not the rank.
No.
It's the association with guys that I've come to know
mm-hmm.
and like and respect. We've got a mutual interest.
Mm. Yes.
And we've got mutual respect.
Yes. And it has been, I mean, it formed you at such a young age too, didn't it? I mean, to go at 16 into that home guard, if you'd never had that experience, you'd be somebody else, wouldn't you? I mean, it's kind of...
And bear thinking about it.
No, yeah. Because you talked about being a bit lost at school. It's kind of something that sort of really set you up, really, didn't it? Yeah.
I do feel fulfilled.
Mm.
And I've done lots of things... as an ignorant, ill-educated youth, and I'm now fulfilled in many ways as an adult.
Mm. Yes, and you know, those medals and memorabilia, it's like they, you know, they're proud moments for you, really, aren't they, looking back at those?
My grandchildren are proud of them.
Yeah.
And I'm pleased about that.
Yes. And also you mentioned that photo. I mean, you've helped to keep the memory of that battalion alive, really, too, haven't you?
Yeah,
like, it's not just about you. It's, you know, you've kind of...
No, it's about us.
You've kept it. It's like a body of men that you've...
Yeah.
Looked over in a way.
I've no doubt, and I haven't talked to anyone about that, but I'll end up with a military funeral, military type funeral. I have an idea that 2nd First Battalion wouldn't want it to be any other way. Even if I don't have many 2-7 guys still there.
So are you almost 90, when do you, so you're 90 next year?
I'll be 90 in February.
Yeah. Did you ever think, that's a funny question to ask, but do you ever think you'd live this long, you know, when you consider you started off your younger years in such turbulent times?
I'll tell you if you turn the machine off.
Oh, right.
I got very drunk on my 50th birthday.
Mm.
I thought it was the end of the bloody world.
Mm.
Because
you felt you were...
Yeah, that's the beginning.
Felt you were old. Yeah.
I'm gone.
Yeah. And here you still are.
Just to piss people off.
Yeah. Has it been a good 40 years, despite the fact that you couldn't... At 50, you were probably thinking, it's all downhill from here, but I suppose you've had some good times over those 40 years.
Well, seeing
years.
That you're writing my history, another one of my successes... and this is a real success, I'm proud of it, is that I quit drinking 40 years ago.
Wow. And what? Why? Why did you decide to do that?
Because I was making a mess of it.
Mm.
I couldn't do that without help, but I quit.
Mm. And you say making a mess of it, so you're one of these people that once you've got a drink, you couldn't stop, that type of thing.
Well, I don't know. They say that, but I don't want to try to see if it works. No, bugger that, no.
Yeah.
There's life after booze.
Yes, yeah. That takes a lot of willpower, though, doesn't it? Yeah.
Oh, I hated it.
Yeah.
But
Had you had and smoking as well, was that something you did in your younger years? You've given up too. Anyway, do you think we've got enough? Is there anything else we need to talk about?
Well, switch off.
Yeah, okay.